There are certain moments and words that shaped a new era in pro wrestling.
Austin 316 says, "I just whipped your ass."
Brett screwed Brett.
Die, Rocky, die.
Suck it!
Introducing the Book of Wrestling, 25 catchphrases that explain the Attitude Era. Tune in as we relive one of the most exciting, intense, and over-the-top times in WWE, with new interviews with the voices that made the promos, calls, and catchphrases into history. Listen now.
We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network. Hope you're checking out the Rewatchables. We did Die Hard 2 last week. We have another good one coming up on Monday. It's an anniversary movie. Prestige TV Podcast has been heating up. Severance season finale is coming this weekend, as well as the latest episode of Atlanta next week. I think we're doing Winning Time. I think the end of We Crashed is coming. I think we have Better Call Saul and Barry. So it's action packed. Subscribe to that now. Coming up on this feed in a little bit, we'll be talking to Nathan Hubbard and Joe House about our day at the Masters, all the stuff we saw, and something really special from Tiger. So we're going to talk about that in a second. At the top of the pod, though, I didn't think we'd talk basketball at the very top because it looked like the Celtics were punting on the Milwaukee game. They scratched Tatum, they scratched Horford, and it seemed like, you know, watching from afar, kind of a savvy way to maybe get out of a 2-7 game against Brooklyn or whatever. Maybe Tatum really needed the rest and Horford's old and he's played a ton of minutes. They didn't squander the game. We thought at the top, oh, they're squandering that. They had really the best kind of game, the valiant loss, where they were a little undermanned, but they got to experiment with three-guard lineups. Derek White got some big minutes near the end, so did Pritchard. Got a little Tyson there and Grant Williams, and they just went toe-to-toe with Milwaukee. And in a weird way, even though they lost, I think there's some stuff they learned probably from that game, some things they tried. The fact that their bench, I think, is, you know, really going to be an asset when they get everybody back if Milwaukee is the team they face in round two. It looks like Milwaukee is now locked in to the two seed unless they decide to throw it away. I, as I've said on this pod many times, I do not think they're afraid of Brooklyn. And they'd probably welcome the chance to play Brooklyn in round one when they know they're not going to have Simmons or Harris. Just go right at them. Now, when we started taping the podcast, which you're about to hear, Philly was up 15-2 against Toronto. They end up blowing the game. And Toronto, there was no Matisse Thybulle. That doesn't explain why Philly lost. Toronto, Siakam went nuts. And Toronto has done this over and over again, and they've become the proverbial, I don't want to play that team in the playoffs. I don't think they're going to make the finals, but for 2 weeks, huge pain in the ass. Huge. Little reminiscent, just a weird matchup. Like, little reminiscent of like the 03 Pistons, not the 04 Pistons, but the 03 Pistons, where all of a sudden that team became a problem and you're watching them and you're like, Ben Wallace grabs every rebound. Chauncey Billups pretty good. Like, and then it became realistic they might make the finals. I don't think Toronto's that good, but huge pain in the ass. Undersized, but not really. Switch on everything whenever they want. They can hit threes. They have multiple guys to go to at the end of the game that you don't totally trust, but sometimes they can get hot. Really good chemistry. And Philly felt it tonight. The other thing Philly felt was this Harden trade, which, you know, the more you look at this and the more you watch Harden, he's out of excuses now. Unless there's some sort of proof that his hamstring has just been damaged beyond repair or that he needs 6 months off or whatever. I just think he's getting old. I think he has a lot of miles. I think he played a lot of games. From really the first year he showed up in Houston all the way through the 2010s. A lot of minutes, really durable. And he might have just peaked, you know, and you think like one thing, this isn't the only thing to look at, but field goals made is a pretty fun stat. I don't know. We've had it for the entire course of NBA history. Here's his last seven games, 2-for-11, 9-for-17, 4-for-15, 4-for-10, 4-for-13, 4-for-10, 3-for-12 tonight. Against Toronto. He had 15 assists, fine. But the explosiveness is not there. He doesn't get to the rim the same way. He cannot make big guys pay like he used to, unless it's like Lauri Markkanen. And when you play a team like Toronto, it's just a terrible matchup for them. A lot of athletes. He's not blown by people. And I'm just seeing a guy that unless he's hitting that step back three, is a lot easier to defend than he used to be. That is not what Philly signed up for. Philly made this Ben Simmons trade. They waited. They thought that this was going to not only make them a contender, but make them a finals team. And they are not a finals team. They have the fifth best odds on FanDuel for a reason, because they are not a finals team. And the guy you have to feel for is Embiid, who had an MVP caliber year. Russell and I are going to talk. We're doing a two-part podcast on Sunday night. We'll dive into who we're voting for in the awards and all that stuff. But you think all the things they could have turned Simmons into, even if it was CJ McCollum. And look, I think CJ's stock is a lot higher than it was 2 months ago. But that trade was sitting there forever. And CJ ends up getting traded for, you could say it was 60 cents a dollar, 80 cents a dollar. Really expensive contract that not a lot of people wanted. New Orleans ends up getting him for Jason Hart, who I really like at the contract he got, and, you know, a bunch of throwing stuff and a pick that probably isn't going to matter that much. And that's what CJ McCollum cost. Even if Philly had gotten him, even if they had gotten Sabonis and just figured out a weird Sabonis thing, at least Sabonis is good. At least Sabonis has the arrow pointing up. But they went all in on Harden and they gave up Curry and Drummond in the trade we've talked about in this podcast many times. I can't remember a trade looking worse within an 8-week stretch that was a big trade that was supposed to change a team than this one. So far, it could flip. Maybe he's saving something for the playoffs. I don't know. But man, the Philly fans in my life are freaking out, because it's not just that it seems like they've squandered their chance to be a finals team this year when they're getting this just awesome Embiid season. But then long term, you have this extension question and whether they've promised him something already and whether you could be in this Westbrook situation down the road where it's year 3, 4, 5 of Harden contract and you're paying him like 50 plus million and he's not remotely the same guy anymore. He's just shooting threes and keeping the ball moving around and he can't guard anybody. I don't think they realized that it wasn't about him not really trying that hard in Brooklyn. It was about maybe he's moving into a different phase of his career. That's what I've been seeing for 2 years now. And there's been excuses left and right, and he's been unhappy and his hamstring hurt and all these different things. But I just don't see a guy who beats people off the dribble like he used to, which was fundamentally what he was all about. Beating people off the dribble, step back threes. And he just doesn't do it anymore in the same way. And athletic teams like Toronto know that they can slow him down or stop him. So this is just heading for one of the weirdest playoffs I think we've had in my lifetime. You could have Miami against Atlanta, Charlotte, or Cleveland. You could have Milwaukee against Brooklyn. And if you're the Celtics, you're sitting there playing Chicago, who's been horrendous against all good teams, who has a negative point differential for the season. The Celtics, I'm sure their dream scenario would be 3. And then Philly, whose nightmare scenario would be playing Toronto in the 4-5. And that's just the East. We didn't even talk about the West, but man, this Philly thing. This is just one of the, this Harden, from the moment he decided he didn't like playing with Russell Westbrook anymore and wanted out, which is the season after the bubble near the near Thanksgiving range, to now, 18 months, one of the goofiest stretches of any great player. And this guy is a top 50 player all time. He's an MVP. And now he's in a city where if this goes badly, this is a top 3 city I wouldn't want things to go badly in. Especially if I'm making a lot of money and my team traded a lot and you have another guy on your team that everybody loves. We will see how he responds. Coming up, we're going to talk Masters with Joe House and Nathan Hubbard. We are live from Augusta. First, Pearl Jam. All right, we're taping this 8:15 p.m. We're in Augusta, Georgia. Joe House is here. Nathan Hubbard is here. You can hear them on the Fairway Rolling podcast, where yesterday we accurately predicted some of the things that happened at the Masters. We were at the Masters. We had a great time at the Masters. I was going to save the top of this podcast house for us to talk about basketball because we thought Celtics, Bucks, and Sixers, Raptors were going to be these pivotal, decide the 2-3-4 in the East. But it looks like the Celtics punted on the game. So as we're taping this podcast, unless that changes, the Celtics are going to be a 3-seed or a 4-seed, which I guess I'm okay with because they're avoiding Brooklyn, right?
But if they catch Toronto,
well,
is that desirable?
It might not be. We'll talk about that later. We'll see how that goes. Let's talk about something that we loved today. Tiger Woods. He's back in our life. We followed him around. We got to see him on the seventh hole. We got to see him for the last four holes. We were pretty close. Nathan, what jumped out at you?
Well, I think people today are going to say Tiger's back. And I got a lot of texts saying he looks great on he looks great. We watched enough of him to know that this round should go down as a heroic effort because his body does not look great in any way, shape, or form. We saw him come up the hill on seven. We watched him limp down the hill on two before that. We watched him dragging his ass up 17 and 18. I mean, we watched him lowering his right shoulder to take weight. I mean, he does not look right. And I heard the telecast say, well, he looks big and he's got all this energy on the back. Faldo's saying, no, this was a heroic round because of the way he just ground out a one under round. That could have been a plus four, plus five.
Well, it also could have been a minus three or minus four.
Right.
He left shots out there. And I think to your point, the thing we discussed this a little bit earlier in the week, I think we need to acclimate to the new normal of Tiger,
yes,
which is this Tiger that's recovering, still recovering,
yeah,
from a catastrophic car accident. The thing that I felt that surprised me was a kind of emotion. And it is always that weird phenomena of a sports hero meaning something personal and eliciting an emotional response. But we kind of anticipated that the crowds would buoy him and be behind him. The experience of every single tee that he arrived at was a standing ovation.
Yeah.
And every single time he arrived at a green, it was a standing ovation. And it was powerful. I mean, I you know, felt myself, you know, both like rooting with all of my being for him to succeed on the holes that we watched, and we caught a ton of it, which was,
yeah,
really great. But also just, you know, a weird like sports satisfaction. You know what I mean? It's just amazing.
It wasn't rowdy though, was it? It
no,
felt
it's
almost
the Masters.
Mothering though.
It's the Masters.
As he walked off 18 through that tunnel, you know, the last vision that I have of him is him walking through that tunnel in 2019 when he wins. And there was just this sort of vortex of energy that carried him through. Everybody out there is just trying to will him to hang in there.
Yeah, that was the difference this time because, you know, he's had these different stages of his career, right? Where he was like the young pup, and then he was like the invincible early mid up till 2008 guy. And then he was the putting his career and life back together guy, but still had the physical stuff. The guy we watched today, it was really memorable. He really seemed like he had like a broken body in a lot of ways. And I don't know if you could see it on TV like we could see it in person. It was just because when you're there, and I hate to do that, when you're there, it's so deep. But when you're there, you can kind of watch these guys when they're not on camera, you know? And like we were on seven and he got up and down really fast. So he putted fast. Then he kind of walked to the side because there were two putts left. And you could see like he can't get comfortable. And I feel like, you know, as somebody who's struggled with bad back stuff over the years, I can always tell when somebody else is uncomfortable, whether it's a back or whatever. The two things that jumped out, he definitely has a limp. Like you can see that on TV, but watching him walk downhill when you're putting more pressure on like your tibia, like that he was clearly not comfortable with that. And then the other thing was his shoulder, his posture was different. His right shoulder kind of dips now. And we were theorizing like, you know, he fucked up his right leg and his hip. And so your posture shifts, but just watching him navigate this, and as House said, he shoots a minus one. He left like three shots on the table. Like even the par set, the hole seven that we were at, he had a perfect shot and it didn't quite stay up and it lipped down. but it easily that could have been a birdie. But I actually think he played well today, House.
Yeah. Oh, he exceeded all expectations in terms of level of play. Now
we were worried he wasn't going to be able to walk 8,000 yards.
Look, he was 50 yards behind everybody coming off the team.
That's another thing. He was never in the front of the pack.
Always
ever.
Always last.
Like we walked with DJ and Colin
Morikawa.
And we were walking in stride with them, and they were walking faster than us.
Yes.
Those are young guys that were just cruising down the hill. We couldn't keep up because our side was muddy. Tiger was, what, House, 50 feet behind every single time?
The whole day. It is funny that in terms of the pace of play, it kind of suited. He did have the experience of being, I don't recall him having to wait at all, and that might have been the function of Bryson and
Casey dropped out.
Yeah,
right. So he had a two-man group in front of him, which we felt like, oh, this is good for Tiger. He's not going to have to stand there for 10 minutes.
I can't believe we're going to say this. Each of the last 16 Masters champions has finished the first round at 11th or better.
Hmm.
Tiger Woods is tied for 10th.
Right.
The scenario for him is playing out. It is going to be 20 miles an hour tomorrow, wind blowing, with a high of 66, low of 42.
That's in the afternoon.
Saturday, it's going to be 17 miles an hour and high of 58, low of 39. It is possible that these next 2 days, as that course dries out, are just straight up survival. And we get into a Sunday sprint when everybody's nervous and Tiger Woods is hanging around the hoop.
Can he
do this?
Well, we thought when we watched him on the 7th, we were at the 7th for an hour and a half, kind of waiting for him, watching all these groups come up. And after we saw him walk up, he had to walk up the hill to 7, and then we were just like, oh man, he's not going to be able to last 4 days. And then we saw him again on 15, 16, 17, 18, looked the same. He's one of the most mentally tough athletes we've had in our lifetime. And I don't think he cares that he's in pain. He's like, I'm fucking finishing this. You can see it.
So we don't know. And honestly, maybe he doesn't know either what his rebound ability is, right? Like,
right. We were talking about that on the way home. Like, what does he do? Is it probably he's got? Like,
hyperbaric chamber.
Hyperbaric message.
Well, cryo.
Can you bring that stuff to Augusta? I mean, he definitely has a massage for it. Is he just in an ice bath? What's he doing?
Yeah, right. But he has the benefit of time to rest. He finished at, you know, whatever.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, he finished like 3 o'clock.
Yeah, and then so he doesn't go off until tomorrow afternoon.
I mean, by the time some people listen to this, he might be like plus five. Who knows? We don't know. We just watched the dude walk 8,000 yards.
The round one split favored the afternoon by 0.79 strokes.
Which, by the way, we predicted pretty vociferously on Fairway Rolling yesterday.
So tomorrow morning, Data Golf's telling us that the morning wave probably has a half a stroke advantage, but that makes his one under look even better given what the morning group did. Now,
well, and he also caught some breaks. Like Cam Smith, who starts out plus two, starts birding everything, and then we're on the 18th watching him, and he just gacks it.
He
hits it too far, comes back, misses the putt. All of a sudden, he's double bogeys plus four instead of plus six.
Berger, who the sharps were on, started to look really good, had momentum, did the same thing coming into 18 at three under. He doubles and falls back.
Yeah. So people, what's it? Five is the lead. DJ never, you know, he got up there, but never like took off to a place that became unrealistic. I don't think Tiger can win the tournament. I'm just going to say that.
Yep.
And I don't say that as like a cut this out and put this on social. I just think him getting in the top 10.
It's not a hot take that the Tiger's not going to win the tournament.
I'm just not saying it in a way like, listen, hands are going like I'm on first take. From what I saw today, like if he finishes top 10.
It's a win.
It's an all-time.
After we're watching Dustin Johnson and these dudes who are just like fucking beasts.
Yes.
Tiger just gutting it out would be like incredible.
Exactly.
Yes.
Just making the cut. I mean, we went through this a couple different times over the shows this week and our anticipation building for this, and Tiger on Sunday arriving and saying he's giving it a go and the practicing. We're getting some feedback that he reached the 15th green in two. Like, wait a minute. And then, you know, Tuesday the press conference arrives and he confirms that he's going to play. And at that point, like the reasonable expectation is,
well, the first reaction was, what, he's playing?
Right. No, we'd had good signs. We'd had a series of good signs starting from the week before.
I'm right, just saying, but this is pretty recent. Yeah, yeah, in the last 3 weeks of a week, thing was not on the radar.
No, it was not
on
the radar. I was
betting against it a month ago.
But our reasonable expectation was, not reasonable expectation, hope. Our best hope, please make the cut. How cool would it be if he could make the cut? And, you know, he hasn't done it yet, but the first major step towards making the cut was accomplished. And it was an extraordinary round of golf in terms of how sharp his ball striking was, especially on the par threes.
And how vulnerable is the wrong word. How kind of un-Tiger-y he seemed, because he doesn't have that aura anymore, because I'm trying to think when this has happened in other sports, right? Like, my default is always to go to Larry Bird. Sorry, guys. But the last 2 years of Bird's career, when he's wearing the back brace, you know, or like Jordan on the Wizards, when his knees are shot and he's still putting up 20 plus a game. Like, sometimes you see these great athletes at this advanced stage where now their body's kind of not cooperating with them, but they still have the mental toughness. They still have the hand eye. They still have all these things. They have the experience. And all that stuff somehow trumps the broken body. And this happens, you know, a couple times a decade, maybe. But this one, to me, that's got to be one of the most memorable rounds he ever played. You could have told me he was going to stop on the 12th hole and just be like, my leg hurts. I got to pack this in. But he had the same aura and kind of like he was kind of waving at the crowd, but not really. He was just kind of focused. And he looked like a guy who was like at the end of a long hike, who had, you know, whose feet are covered in blisters. And is just like, I see the finish line. I'm just trying to get to the finish line. Don't talk to me. I'm not here to interact. I'm not here to socialize. Just I see that down there. I'm going to try to get there. And it was really cool to watch.
There are 18 guys under par only. The cut line right now is, well, top 50 in ties is +2. So you double that for tomorrow.
Well, in FanDuel, the cut score is +3 or better, is +120. So they're saying it's either going to be +3 or -4, which means
+3 or +4.
Even 76, he's going
to
make it.
If the wind comes up tomorrow, which you expect it to do, that cut line is going to be +4. So that means he's got a 77 to make the cut.
I don't want to like get into the specifics. I don't want to tempt the golf gods here, right?
Like, House is so weird with this. It's like, I don't know why you don't want to talk about the cut line.
17 different sandwiches.
Because I gamble on golf. That's why.
We don't
talk about these things. We don't manifest them. We don't speak them into existence. We say to the golf gods, please, we appreciate and respect your favorable light that you shone down on us today. Could you please, you know, think favorably of us tomorrow? And that's it. That's the end of it as far as what I'll, you know, ask for and hope for and count on.
He only hit 50% of his greens today. So he can actually play better tomorrow.
It was amazing. I'm trying to think. First of all, no Mickelson on the course either. Okay. And that was the other
Did
thing.
You
like
miss
we were I've only been in the Masters in 2018 and today. Mickelson was always kind of the second most popular guy on the course, right? I don't even know who the second guy is now. The person is 10% of what people cared about. Like, we were watching, the masses were just following Tiger like he was the leader on the, you know, on Sunday.
What's insane is the way the tee times worked out.
Right.
All of the guys that would have been natural guys of interest were so late in the day. Like Jordan Spieth was at the very end of the day, and we were out there after Tiger finished. And the place was emptying out.
Yeah, people were like, let's go get something to eat. Let's
front of the ropes with DJ and Morikawa. Like,
yeah, we walked.
Talking shit.
We could have we walked 10 and 11 with DJ and Morikawa.
We could have seen Spieth hit 12. We could have been like, you know, right there for that. Whatever we wanted.
We got to sit stand next to Paulina. Speaking of whatever
we
wanted.
Paulina. Saw Tracy Wolfson.
Luminous.
Yeah.
I'd like to use that word, luminous.
It's the energy of the course. When Tiger finished, completely shifted.
It did.
And I don't know, I was there in 18 and it felt like Tiger was obviously there and doing great, but it also felt that way when Mickelson was there. And we also, at that point, we had some of the old legends were there, and those guys are starting to fade out of there.
Let's talk about the course for a second.
Hold on, let's take a break, and then we'll do that. This baseball season, turn K's into cash and big hits into big wins with FanDuel Sportsbook. Right now, new customers can step up to the plate with a risk-free first bet up to $1,000. I have some fun future bets. As you know, I'm in an American League Keeper League. I know a little too much about the Red Sox in the American League for whatever reason. I love the Red Sox over on FanDuel. 85.5 wins. The lineup is really good. I believe in the bullpen. I think it's going to be better than people think. And I'm not as worried about it's the starters as some others. I think the Red Sox are going to win between 88 and 92 games. I like that over. I like if you're looking for deep bets, like Bo Bichette to win the MVP, 30-1. Toronto shortstop plays every game, possible 30-30 guy. Watch out for him. Eloy Jimenez for most home runs in either league. 25-1. I think those are my favorite three. Sign up, place your first bet. FanDuel will refund you up to $1,000 back in site credit if you don't win. There's no better place to bet America's pastime than on America's number one sportsbook. Our friend, they have parlay insurance. They have great promotions every day. Safe and secure app. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Sign up using promo code BS to get started with your risk-free first bet. Up to $1,000. Must be 21 plus. Present in select states only. First online. Real money wager only. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Connecticut, 888-789-777. In Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER. In Michigan, 800-270-7117. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York. Tennessee red line is 800-889-9789. And in West Virginia, 1800-GAMBLER.net. All right, coming back. So I want to talk Tiger more, but it was thunderstorms here last night. And we were like, what's going to happen with this course? Obviously, they're the best at this, but it was a water slide. And... the course itself seemed perfect, although it was wet. Everything was just sticking. And then the walking around, which we thought was going to be the muddiest, worst experience ever, honestly wasn't that bad. But the course, the morning played harder than the afternoon. I don't know where we go going forward with this, Nathan.
Well, we sat there on 7 and watched as the course dried out, right?
Yeah.
This was the best observation Bill Simmons made.
Thank you. Of
the entire
this
day.
Where I was trying to go.
Yeah.
Other than that, the house shouldn't have the oysters. That was my other best observation.
I had the oysters yesterday. The on the front side, every pin from 1 through 6 was exposed to the sun. The pin on 7 today was under the trees, under the canopy, in the shadows until, I don't know, but basically after Tiger's group came through. So whatever time that was in the afternoon.
And for the people listening who haven't been to a tournament, I'm sure some people have, but not everybody. When you stay in a hole, it's amazing to watch everybody make the same mistakes with the putts.
Yeah.
Everybody reads it the same way, completely wrong. And we were on 7, the ball kept rolling to one of two spots. And one of the spots was closer to the fairway, front of the sand trap. And everybody thought the putt was breaking one way and it just didn't. And then they would stare at it completely confused. This has been our experience every time we've ever stayed at a hole for like 2 hours. Everybody, and you almost think like, why don't they just ask the gallery, right? Hey man, how's this breaking?
Not technically legal. But that hole sitting in the shade meant that it didn't dry out. And so everybody left it short because the grass was catching it.
So that became a hard hole.
As soon as the sun hit it, you saw the hole start to change. It became faster. And when the wind goes up tonight with the subterranean air and the sun tomorrow, this course is going to be harder and faster. The easiest it's going to play was this morning.
Well, and two other holes that we noticed are just different, which we mentioned on the fairway rolling. The 15. Which
kind of just a hole now.
Everybody lays up on 15. In the old days, it was like, is he going to go for it? Is he going to lay up? What's he going to do?
We only saw Cameron Young go for it, the young stud, the kid from Wake Forest who crushed the The Corn Ferry Tour, yeah. And he hit a three wood from the fairway to win the water.
The wind's going to be out of the west from here. It's dead into it. And it played harder. Last five years.
They moved it, so they moved the tee back, what, 20 yards, 15 yards?
And so now everybody's laying up. Last 5 years, that hole played 4.7 average strokes to par, you know, par five. This year, or this round, it was 4.82. That's not a huge move, but it's enough to tell you they were having to stay back as opposed to go. We saw almost no eagle putts on that hole all day.
Well, the point we made yesterday on Fairway Rolling was just like, if on Sunday when you're watching this and you're thinking, oh man, he's two back, but if he can eagle 15, it's like, I don't know if people are eagling 15.
I wonder if they're going to move that tee up on Sunday.
Mm. You can't change the tee, can you?
Oh, yeah. The
markers.
The tradition of the Masters is, you know, to create scoring opportunities on the back nine. What do they call it? The second nine. Pardon me. Justin Ray helped clean me up a little bit earlier this week. But, yeah.
I call it the back.
The second nine on Sunday.
Or the back nine.
Has some scoring opportunities to create that drama.
I mean, the other thing we noticed, and we stood right behind where they hit in the 18. They moved that back a little bit too.
Oh.
And
holy moly.
It hosed everybody.
I can't tell you guys listening how harrowing that hole is. And you saw multiple people.
Trees.
Including Brooks near the end.
Speech.
Just
Tiger.
Look, these guys are the best. I'm always amazed constantly when I'm at a tournament how they aren't afraid of just hitting somebody who's standing right there, like slicing it into the crowd and killing somebody. You think all these things like, there's people talking, there's people moving, there's people clapping on different holes. The amount of concentration you need to do that at the highest level. And then you look at the 18th hole and this, like, basically they have, it's like a needle in a haystack trying to hit through that. And you think, imagine the pressure. You're up one, you just one good drive and you're going to get a par and you're going to win the Masters. And just looking straight ahead at that. And those two trees on each side that are kind of bending in. It's crazy.
It's extremely intimidating.
It's disturbing. It's like, oh my God, I'm disturbed.
Well, and Cam Smith, who made 8 birdies today, and I think had the round of the day, even though Sung Jae finished at -5 and Cam only finished at -4. But he started with a double. He finished with a double. Bookend doubles and
bizarre.
Still shoots 4 under. I mean, there does feel like this generational transfer that's happening here. We've known that we've got these young guys coming. We've got Scottie Scheffler. Sung Jae and Cam Smith finished tied for second here before. But this feels like now the validation that they're ready to step up and be that guy. Not just a guy who wins wins Travelers and the Amex, but steps up and actually contends in majors.
Well, wait a minute. It's a pretty rich leaderboard, right?
It's
has
beautiful.
A combination
it's a wonderful
of
leaderboard.
Masters winners in the form of Dustin Johnson and Danny Willett.
Oh, now you're giving credit to Dustin Johnson, the bubble Lakers master.
No. Yeah, you wouldn't even let me bet on Dustin Johnson.
I think
the best score since 2015 at Augusta after today. Of anyone.
I don't know why you guys are talking shit at me. I'm just talking about, like, it's not time yet, not after Thursday.
We're not crowning anybody.
To confer to the younger, because you have Kevin Na sitting here, you know, top 10, going along
Connors.
And Jason Kokrak, his best finish in this thing is like, I think he has a top 50 finish, but that's the best he's ever done in the Masters.
I just think that those guys, Scheffler, Cam Smith, Sung Jae, and you're right, DJ, had the best rounds of the day.
Okay.
Like, the other rounds were grind 'em outs. Those guys left a bunch of strokes out there.
There were two heroes today, though. Tiger Woods and Varner, who bogeyed 4 of the first 9 holes and somehow finished -1. Hit an eagle.
Well, he had an eagle that Nate and I were watching on
screaming
13.
At.
Yeah.
That looked like it had a chance to be an albatross. It was approaching the hole. We were like, get in the hole. It was such a great shot. Another sort of iconic pine straw shot, potentially.
Varner's like Jordan Poole in a Warriors game. He's just like, I'm hitting threes. He's airballing. What's this guy up to?
Look, Cam Smith today had 5.4 shots gained approach. That was 2.3 strokes better than anyone else in the field. Taylor Gooch was second. So,
and the other thing, watching like Cam Smith and some of these other young guys, and then watching Tiger, and you're just like watching these guys. I mean, Cam Smith could have played 54 holes today.
Yeah.
Tiger could have played 18 holes today. And probably really like 14 holes.
But it was interesting to see DJ and Cam Smith. They're, you and I talk about this. They're kind of the same side of the coin in terms of personality. Obviously different countries, but they play amnesia golf. They're not men of many words.
You know who also fits that is Scheffler, right?
Yes.
Just this quiet mind. Unflappable. There's these guys with this quiet mind kind of approach, it seems, that it may, certainly makes sense in the context of the Masters. We're going to do more Tiger.
We should probably talk about the leader at some point.
Well, Sungjae, he's super high quality. I mean, he tied for second at the Masters in 2020 in November.
I'm just saying, and we're at the 21-minute mark. We haven't mentioned five yet. He's minus five. By tomorrow, who knows? But he was steady the whole day.
Yeah. He's finished second here before, high quality. Let's see him finish this one out.
And we said, you know, he's on the correct side of the draw. He caught the he's part of the late draw, and now he gets to go play in the morning before the winds really get whipping and
that
ripping.
Seems like such a big advantage this year.
He's also, by the way, a dispassionate golfer in the same way that Cam and DJ and Scheffler are, and that he doesn't seem to get too emotional. You've never seen him slam clubs down.
That's right. But on that quiet mind point, do you guys think that there is any possibility that Tiger would have tried to go play in any other tournament other than the Masters at this stage?
I do not.
It's just the Masters that he would be even willing to try in terms of this stage of his recovery, right?
I think you're right. I mean, we can speculate that maybe he would have gone and done St. Andrews. I mean, look, I just think back
to... Well, he could still do St. Andrews. I'm just saying, like...
I mean, look, he won the U.S. Open on a broken leg. I keep thinking about that.
We're talking about that on the course, because you were like, I can't believe this guy's doing it. And we were like, well, he has a way of, like, just whatever kind of pain he's in, he can kind of compartmentalize it.
I think this might be worse.
Oh, it's worse.
The way he's holding himself.
This is Ben Hogan after Ben Hogan. This is, you know, that analog makes perfect sense. He almost died in a car crash. I
mean, it was interesting watching him just stand when he wasn't putting.
Right.
And he would always put his weight on the other leg, which, and that was it. He wasn't like standing straight. He didn't seem happy ever. And he was just kind of doing what he had to do to keep the round going. It's 4.5 hours. You're standing all the time. You're walking 8,000 yards. You have to stop. You're going to, you know, swing 72 times plus all the practice stuff. And he's got to do it 3 more days.
Did anybody play themselves out today? We got Morikawa and Rory.
Well, let's talk about Beefy Brayson.
Okay.
Because I think you guys were saying all week, this is a cross off. I bet on him not to make the cut, which was like plus 155. And you were like, he's a mess. Even Bryson said, I'm 80%.
And he shot a 77. He has to shoot even par or better tomorrow. Can he do it?
What did you see is so surprising to me, and it is a function of his lack of practice that is a direct result of his inability to practice because he's hurt. But the touch that Tiger had, like, has Tiger been secretly practicing for 3 months? His approach on 18,
I think the way
he saved par on 18.
Yeah, up and down on 7 was ridiculous.
Wearing no glove, I didn't understand.
Yeah, but that touch, and Bryson had none of that. Bryson just is so rusty still. It's not any one aspect of his game that's letting him down.
He was good at toweling the sand off that when the sand shot on the green.
He was the best.
All the guys we saw, there's some guy that comes out on these holes, because if you hit it out of the sand trap, the sand goes on the green.
Splashes onto the green.
And we called it like this. Would we call it the splooger?
You called it the
splooge. The guy with the splooger would come out, and it was this really long thing, and he would just kind of whack the sand off. And I want this for my house. It's like I hit my kids with
it. It's like a crumb comb, right? When you're sitting at fine dining.
Where do I buy this?
The bread crumb comb.
And there were multiple splugers. They came out the course.
Anybody that went in the sands necessarily splooged, yes.
It led to the best thing we saw when we spent an hour and a half at the seventh hole, which was Matthew Wolf, for some reason, just we didn't even know he broke a club on like the fourth or fifth hole.
Yes.
Trying to putt out of a sand trap for some reason, doesn't get out, hits it. He seems like he's mad at his caddy, but then for some reason, tries to unsplooge the sand.
And Mackenzie Hughes is trying to putt.
And Mackenzie Hughes kind of gets mad at him.
Not kind of.
And then Matthew Wolf kind of got mad that Mackenzie Hughes got mad. And then he just got super mad. And then he made his thing and he walked off. He kind of walked off, kind of stomped off through his club at the Grand. It was very strange. They you see some strange things when you're there in person.
I hope that the Netflix show is going to capture all this, because there was a lot of drama on the course today, to say the least. But yeah, Matthew Wolf, who did not play well today, is carrying some darkness. And I say that not laughingly, because
no, he's working on stuff.
He's having some issues. You could see it on the course.
Yeah, he got in here because of his sort of out of nowhere performance in the PGA. But then that darkness seemed to be infecting Colin Morikawa at some point as we were waiting for him.
We thought it was like It Follows, where it just jumped from Wolf to Morikawa.
And this is where I'm sort of looking at the leaderboard going, did somebody play themselves out of it? Because there are guys who aren't in the top 11.
Bryson
did. But nobody, nobody ran away with it today.
So Bryson's not shooting a minus 13 the next three rounds to get back in.
Yes.
Because what is minus 10, minus 11 is going to win?
Morikawa and Rory are at plus one. Rahm, Spieth, and Xander, who, by the way, had no birdies today, are at plus two. Kepka's at plus three. Are they out of it? I mean, I they're only seven.
No, I would say anyone plus two or better
is still in this.
Yeah.
You know, the winning score, FanDuel has a winning score bet, minus 11 or better, minus 120. I don't know if we see a minus 11 this weekend.
I don't know either with the wind.
Yeah.
Well, the real question always comes down to the behavior of the weather on Sunday.
Yeah.
And right now the forecast is extremely favorable.
It's gorgeous.
So if there's somebody in there in the range of, like, if they just get to like seven or eight on Saturday,
they could drop a 66 each.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody comes out and drops a 66, and then you're at the traditional Masters kind of number between 12 and 16 under. That's a Masters winner.
One, talking about people physically and how they looked, thought Brooks looked really good.
Yeah.
Physically, he looked great.
Yeah. Brooks looked poised to
go run away with it, but he completely fell apart on the back.
The back just, ugh.
What was the streak for Brooks on the back?
He made bogeys on 11, 12, and 13, and then 17 and 18.
Yeah. I mean,
he was five over on the back.
Plus three somehow. He was looking good when we saw him.
Yeah, he looked like he was going to pull it together.
And physically good.
Fleetwood looks as fucking handsome as ever. What a handsome guy.
Do you have a vote on the Victor pants from today?
Oh, Hovland, he had a horror show. Yeah, he hit in the azaleas at one point.
Yes.
It depends on whether you want a glass half full or glass half empty with Hovland, because he ended up even, and he was all over the joint. He
can tell you a lot about the woods.
Hovland ended up at even?
Yeah, he double bogeyed 11 with a three putt from, like, you know, what was it? You know, 4 feet?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he missed a couple shorties.
But here's the thing, and I really
Brooks
wish
the same.
Somebody in these camps, his sponsors or whatever, needs to go and say, in the history of the fucking Masters, nobody has showed up in fucking stripe jogging pants that you know, stop at your ankle and pink jogging pants and won the goddamn golf tournament in the history of this fucking tournament. You can't show
up. There
was
like a weird design on his butt cheek.
What are you doing?
Yeah, that
you can't show up on Thursday and like, oh, I'm going to I hope to win this golf. No, motherfucker, you are not dressed like that. Not at this golf tournament.
By the way, I forgot to tell the audience, Drunk House is here. I felt that way about Higo.
It just made me so mad.
Higo looked like he was dressed by somebody's grandfather.
He didn't like his shirt. That's a shirt in style.
You liked his finish.
Higo's all right. We were talking about who's going to be the hot young golfer this year. Meaning hot, like all of a sudden they're, you know, one
and
of the last three.
Out of the nowhere, kind of unexpected name.
Yeah.
That you would.
Higo is on the list. Let's take a break. We want to talk more about the experience of being at the Masters. All right. So, said this the last time. I'm going to repeat it. And then I did a lot of self-evaluation the last 2 days at Augusta. Okay. Because, you know, you have a lot of time. You're just kind of hanging out. Just killing time, especially like we're on the seventh hole for an hour and a half. We're on 15 and 16 waiting for Tiger to come down for an hour. And, you know, instinctively you want to look at your phone. Like, I'm bored. Nothing's happening for this minute of my life. What's going on? I'm going to see if I got a text. Somebody emailed me. I got to look at my phone. The Masters is like a detox center.
Yeah.
They take your phones before you even get on the course. Nobody has a phone. Nobody has anything. And you get used to it after about an hour. But during that hour, it's like coming off heroin.
Yeah, I'm touching my back pocket every 30, 40 seconds because I feel there's nothing
in there. It's alarming.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, is technology ruining us? Because it takes me an hour to just feel normal again in a golf tournament. To not have my phone for an hour, I'm completely discombobulated. Like, what does that say about me?
I think you're the same as everybody.
What does that say about us?
It's enormously refreshing. It is such a weight off the shoulders. And, you know, the only thing that you have to be careful about is making sure that all the people in your life who've grown accustomed to kind of instant feedback
to be available.
Know that you're going to be off the grid for some period of time. But that's just a close circle of friends and loved ones, business folks. And you can let them all know. They know where you are.
You know what? I'm starting a new thing.
What is it?
I'm not going to take my phone places. Go to a Clipper game. We always have this thing. I need my phone. Got to have it. What if something happens? It's like, well, we were just at the Masters for 8 hours. We got out, gave the lady the check, got the phone.
Yeah.
I had a bunch of texts. Some work stuff happened. It was fine. I caught up in 10 minutes. Didn't need my phone for those 8 hours.
It reintroduces moments of serendipity. It's like going to college in the 90s.
That's one of the best.
Yeah, we ran into friends.
Yes. Yeah, you just have
to. We ran into our guy Vino from CAA. It was Vino!
You have to pick physical landmarks where maybe we'll meet. Like, I left you guys to go to the bathroom at the par 3
contest. Yeah, we didn't know if we'd see you again.
We might not have seen each other until dinner. And that was okay.
It was okay. We were going to be fine. It's like, Nathan, text us when you get out of the Port-a-John. I'll be waiting for your text. Yeah. I have my ringer on.
This is a tour of like, you know, a path down old guy radio.
It's not old guy radio. Well, this is everybody's life right now.
I'm just talking about in the days of us in college where we look back and say, it's a goddamn miracle that we ever saw each other.
I know.
How do we?
It did feel like a miracle when we did see each other. It's like, hey, it's house. But we were saying, like, what would happen if we took our three sons to the Masters? And it became a conversation of who would have the biggest meltdown and who would want to leave first because they didn't have their phone. And it's like, we're doing something wrong just in life. And yeah, I'm going to really make a concerted effort to not be on my phone. The Masters. It's like going to rehab.
Yes, they try to help addictive personalities by replacing the technology with alcohol and egg salad sandwiches.
Right. What happens is I'm going to weigh 300 pounds because I'm going to eat and drink every day, but I won't be on my phone. It'll be great.
We can't do that for our son. So it's a conundrum, but it has been refreshing and wonderful, and I wish more of life was like this.
Did we really miss anything today? What happened?
I'm barely a third of the way through the text and email, so I don't know, but it doesn't feel like it. It was
like Anthony Davis was saying there's some story about, hey, I don't know, maybe I'll get traded, but you know, I had two fluke injuries, and it's like, all right, I didn't know about that story for 8 hours. Was I okay? Yeah, probably.
The lesson is everybody should experience the Masters once in their life.
I think more events should just be like, don't take your phone.
Yeah.
We're taking it. You don't get like concerts should. I know I'm preaching to the choir on this one, Nathan.
Yeah.
Music concerts, you just shouldn't have your phone. Watching these people video. Now I sound like an old guy. Watching these people videotaping the person on stage or just watching the person on stage is one of the weirdest things that's evolved in our society since we've been alive, I think.
I don't know. I it is a conundrum because, you know, you guys in the entertainment business, the authenticity of folks participating in those events.
Right. You feel like you have to be in the conversation.
And then, you know, it is a fun way to connect with people like, oh, they posted something. Oh, they were into that show. That's cool. And then maybe you read text. Hey, I saw you were at the, like, in fact, I got texts.
But guess what? At the Masters, really fun to just watch the golfers versus like, hey, Tiger's there. I'm videotaping it with my phone.
There is something.
And you didn't have to deal with those people.
There is something different to the energy of a crowd when everyone is focused on the same thing. We are all sort of chemically wired to be together. It's what creates that energy of a crowd. And it gets it gets diluted sometimes when people are distracted by their phone. I'm actually less bothered by the capturing content of it, because at least the person's focused, than I am when half the people are distracted. Today on that 18th green, as Tiger was grinding out one final par for an absolutely heroic round, every single pair of eyes in that place was on the same thing. And there is something wonderfully connective and human about that. That's what makes the Masters great.
It also does both the genteel civility of the crowd. Like, everybody knows how to behave. Only one asshole the entire time yelling, "Get in the hole." Right. And then he had to be over my fucking shoulder. Like, seriously, bro. Fortunately, I had not had enough vodka at that point to make a
yelled at a couple of Tigers after he
because
did stuff.
Everybody That's was fine. Yelling out Tiger when he That's did fine. Successful things.
Oh, and I yelled at Morikawa, "Hey, get your fucking shit together. We have a lot of money on you. What are you doing?"
We didn't say that.
We were very supportive.
We believe in Colin.
Yeah, we walked with him a couple holes just to show our faith in him.
He's got to bounce back round at him tomorrow. He's got to bounce back round at him tomorrow. I know it.
Yes.
I love the civility that Nathan mentioned. I like the fact that we were all locked in on one thing instead of scattered on a million things. I liked having conversations with people. The conversations would naturally end without somebody looking at their phone, and then maybe they would pick up again a minute later.
And there's no performance. That was the other thing I wanted to talk about. Like, nobody's trying to perform for their phone or perform for, whatever their audience of friends.
It was also nice post-pandemic just to see a lot of faces. Although there was a couple of pandemic moments, like we were in a big crowd once and somebody coughed and it was like a deep kind of deep recesses of the lungs cough. And I was just like, I'm getting away from that person.
It wasn't just one cough.
It was. So there's still like that residue. And
come on.
It's still weird when you're huddled with people that like, oh, this person's right behind me and they don't have a mask on. And then it's even weirder when somebody had a mask on. Like, what are you doing?
I thought we're okay here.
Yeah, we're outdoors. Anyway, food.
Oh boy, are we starting? Are we starting with the midnight pizza order? Or
no? So House, Jacoby was texting us, and he asked House, "What are you eating and drinking?" He made the mistake of
I didn't put any drinks in. I didn't want to put that in writing.
House texted back, "Last 24 hours of eating." This was at 6:30. This is true because I witnessed all of this.
Oh.
BLT and egg sandwich, shrimp cocktail, oysters, gumbo, steak sandwich, banana foster, bread pudding, sweet pepper gnocchi, wedge salad, tenderloin and scallop, blueberry cheesecake, pepperoni extra cheese dominoes, short rib quesadilla, egg salad sandwich, pimento cheese sandwich, and a chicken Caesar salad.
You didn't have the strawberry shortcake?
I didn't get a bite of it.
Sorry about that.
No, you offered it.
So we go to a really nice dinner with our friends at FanDuel last night. Multiple courses. Like, I definitely felt like I was stuffed at the end of it. We get home and House is like, "We got to get pizza." And we order Domino's and he decides he can't decide between Brooklyn or Thin Crust and just orders two pizzas. So now all of a sudden Brooklyn and Thin Crust. By the way, the Brooklyn style was delicious. Yeah,
with the extra cheese.
I was very surprised how good that was. Yeah. This is not a Domino's plug, but as people listening know, I'm a Domino's defender.
And our friend Dave Chang, who we felt like we immediately FaceTimed him to show him our Domino's.
Yeah, we had to. Every time I have Domino's, I think of Dave. Yeah, he was really proud.
He really was. Yeah.
So you had a full dinner and then Domino's. And this was after we ate and drank all day. I don't understand how you do it.
So did you. You had some.
No, I felt bullied. Honestly, I felt bullied. Everyone was having pizza.
It was delicious.
I felt bullied.
I loved it.
It was really good.
Great, great way to go.
And I didn't even mention all the drinks you had. There were wine and there was...
Well, the one thing that I'm surprised by is the rate. How can I have two Bloody Marys tier one every time? Every time we sit down,
I don't understand how you drink the Bloody Marys that fast. I like to savor the Bloody Mary. It's like a delicacy and you drink it like...
Well, you know why? Because it's like it's food.
Right.
It drinks like a meal. That's why it goes.
I was like still putting horseradish in mine.
Yeah, mine was gone. And I was ready for the second.
I've talked about this before, but the horseradish is so important to me.
You did a great job.
I like it to be like a little pinkish, like pink yellowish. when you go. Nathan was, I mean, you have nothing to be ashamed of with your eating performance either.
You mean the fact that I had to wake up, go for a run, and
yes,
go to the bathroom the in the first, woods? Because we, I ate yeah. the pizza
we did
last
tweet
night
that out this morning.
Yeah, Nathan went jogging this morning and had an issue and had to go in the woods.
It was going to be a very positive day for having to do with all woods. Anything having to do with woods, Tiger Woods, Nathan in the woods. We knew it was going to turn out.
Bryson in the woods.
Bryson, yeah.
When Bryson kept going in the woods, we were saying he was pulling a Nathan anytime we saw him. Yeah, so we had, I don't know. There's people are super nice here.
It's almost 9 every o'clock. Time it's I come almost to the, Domino's time.
Every time I come to the South, I'm always like, they figured some stuff out here.
The air feels nice. Southern spring.
Hay fever, not awesome.
Everyone should experience the Masters.
Yeah. All right. We'll take one more break.
So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe. Frische Netzsekt, verschiedene Sorten, je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 3,49 Euro. Und außerdem Emira Klettscheiben, Natur, je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,22 Euro. Frohe Weihnachten. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
Geschenke, mit denen niemand rechnet. Bis zum 26.12. in deiner Rewe-App. Einfach täglich öffnen und Coupons und Gewinnchancen sichern.
Rewe. Dein Markt.
All right, so FanDuel put the Masters odds for the rest of the weekend, and we're going to try to figure this out for you, the home listener. Cam Smith favored right now, 5-1. I guess he has to be.
Yeah.
Because of the 8 birdies, but man, is he going to have another round with 8 birdies?
I mean,
8 birdies is a lot of birdies.
The last time we saw him, he was winning the Players. So he's beaten all these guys. He won in Hawaii. He's beat the best guys twice this year already.
It's a good number for Cam. Because of the ball striking that number that Nate mentioned, coupled with what we know he's capable of putting wise, he literally is, you know, one of the best putters at Augusta that I've ever, you know, had the pleasure of watching.
He does seem in complete command for a fairly young guy. So Cam's 5-1, Dustin's plus 650, Scheffler plus 750, M is plus 950. Cantlay's 13-1. No.
How is
Neiman 7-1? No. Connors 28-1. And it goes down. Rahm 31-1. Zalatoris 34-1. Daniel Berger.
What happened?
44-1.
I want to see Willie Z. What happened to Willie Z? Why is he all the way down to 34?
Well, because he made some bogeys down the back.
Just at the end, we were bullish on his performance during the day.
Yes.
And Morikawa is 37-1. That was 40-1. So there's been some action on him. But
you don't like Danny Willett at 55-1?
No, I don't. At all those guys, I gotta say, DJ really jumped out to me today.
It's the number. You said it.
First of all, plus 650.
Yeah.
His family were there, which we saw in the 10th. Everybody just seemed in a great spot. He seemed super confident. He seemed physically perfect.
Yes.
He's, you know, eye test wise, if you think like basketball, I think the big eye test sports, basketball, tennis, golf, baseball, when you're actually just kind of, you can really check out, he just jumps out. If you knew nothing about golf, you would just assume, you would stare at him for 30 seconds, you would watch him hit a couple shots, and you would be like, is that one of the best guys? That has to be, right?
Let me ask Nathan, what would have to befall DJ over these next 3 rounds? What has to happen to knock him off of the confident stride? And by confident stride, I'm talking about being in complete control of his game. Even the bogey on 17, he's like, I hit a good shot.
Yeah.
It went over. It was
right.
The tiniest of misjudgments, but it's like, I didn't even hit a bad shot.
The only thing for me is in every interview we've heard, he's talking like he's on the ascent and that he knows he's been digging it out from a lower place, which tells me that he isn't at 100% confidence level. He says, it's getting better. It's starting to get into shape, which I think he trusts that process very well because he's DJ. But that's the only piece, is if he regresses a slight bit, because it's a 2-step forward, 1-step back process always for most golfers.
You just, that's just in terms of a confidence notion.
Yeah. I mean, if the game slips just a little, you could see him take a step back. But I think right now, I mean, what is he to top 10 for crying out loud?
Well,
It's going to be we got to pay juice, I'm sure.
Is there a chance? I mean, that he doesn't
finishing positions. Yeah, yeah. He's plus 115 to be top five.
I mean,
yeah, so you got
to
lay juice
minus 195 to be plus 10.
God.
I have a theory on this too, because you know we get to watch all these different threesomes when they were going. We probably saw 20 threesomes.
Yeah, over the course of our
time. And it's always interesting to me how they interact or how they don't interact, right? Like with Tiger. First of all, Tiger was 50 feet behind everybody at all times, so there wasn't a lot of interaction. But then you see the other ones, like we mentioned the Matthew Wolf thing that happened.
Yes.
There's other ones where they're not talking at all. Like Cam Smith and Bryson, not a lot of story time for either guy there. They're just doing their own thing. It was like watching two people, like two ships passing the night.
Yeah.
I mentioned this because DJ was playing with Morikawa and Billy. And they had kind of an energy to them. It was, they were like almost like felt a little Ryder Cuppy. They seemed like they were buddies. We watched DJ and Morikawa walk down 10 together and talk the whole time. And they get to play together tomorrow, is my point. He just seemed really comfortable even with the guys he was playing with.
They got paired at the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
And kicked everybody's ass.
Right.
They are Adidas, they are TaylorMade. If DJ has friends, it's Colin Morikawa on the golf course.
You could see it.
Great draw for DJ in that respect, right?
Yes.
Not that there's anybody that I think could possibly get under DJ's skin.
No, that's
draw.
The most I've
well,
seen.
Well, then everyone loves Billy
course.
Too, because so.
And Billy talks. He's the best.
DJ hit an approach on 10, which we got to watch. And it was hard to tell whether it stayed up or not, because it was a front thing. And if it didn't stay up, it was going to roll down. And Billy was up ahead because he'd used
Bird
driver. And he turned around. He's like, it stayed on. Like he was kind of excited for him. And I was like, oh, you guys all like each other. Yeah. We just watched all these people who don't talk.
Well, and Billy's walking down. Now we were up right up against the ropes and some fans yelling out, go Billy, you know, go Gators. He's like, thanks guys.
Yeah, he seems like top five coolest guy on the tour just from watching from before.
It's just a reminder of what a bonding experience that Ryder Cup really is. Because I think Colin Morikawa saw DJ do 100 shots that night after they won. They've been partners twice. They kicked everybody's ass, and here they are, and it's helping them through a major.
See, I think that the reason that DJ is a great value right now as a potential winner is because he is past all of the things that gave him a hard time in terms of the technical aspects of getting around this golf course.
He knows the golf course.
He's so comfortable in it, and he went out and shot 20 under on it in November of 2020.
Yeah.
And just, you know.
I thought you said that one didn't count, Hass.
I
thought you put that next to the Lakers bubble title. No fans. House is like, I don't acknowledge that title.
It counts in reps.
Notches on the belt.
It counts in reps of him going around that golf course feeling very, very comfortable. Like nothing that he's going to confront is going to knock him off his stride.
Tiger's post-round interview today, he said he warmed up horribly. And then he said, but my dad always said, did you accomplish the goal? The goal was, did you warm yourself up? And the answer is yes. And he said, so I just said, I know where to hit it. Go out and do it. DJ, when he gets on that first tee, he knows where to hit it every time.
Well, you think he's 37 years old. He's only won two majors. I say only, even though a lot of people haven't won any majors. But U.S. Open, he won once. Masters, he won once.
He's DJ'd a few.
Bubble Masters doesn't even really count for House. This is right around the time you guys start adding some titles. I would say mid to late 30s for a golfer. This is like the last wave. You hit your 40s, body starts to change a little older, a little
young
achy.
Guys coming up now.
I still think he's the most, you guys know more about golf than I do. I still think he's the most talented golfer that we have.
Well, so his single
not
biggest,
counting Tiger.
His biggest accomplishment since winning the Masters in 2020, he hasn't won on tour since but he did go 5-0 at the Ryder Cup.
Right.
Know? The first time.
Like the other countries, like that's the guy we're afraid of.
Yeah.
This guy.
And he put it down.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing as I size up his fortunes and then look at this list of guys, the only guy that I'm kind of concerned about of the
yeah, let's play this game. Who are you kind of concerned about if we bet on DJ right now?
It's Scotty Scheffler.
Yeah.
Mm, he just seems
yeah, he's just...
He's like one of those annoying pitchers that just like strike one, strike two. Oh, I fouled that one off. Like you're just on the defensive constantly.
I love that. That's a great comparison. I think that's exactly right. He just knows where the two sides of the plate are and he's going to nibble on the edges when he needs to. He'd go right down the middle when he needs
to. He's a sneaky big guy, too.
Yeah, he's huge. But Scotty just beat him in Austin, head-to-head in the match play.
Exactly right.
And so that's the guy to look out for. The only other, you know, look, we got all excited about DJ's Sunday round at the Players. Well, guess who won the Players? Cam Smith. So I really think it's those two guys who are going to represent the real threat in the end.
Well, we're talking about top five bets on FanDuel. There's just the odds that jump out to me. Connors at plus 360 and Zalatoris at plus 410. Both of those guys seem really steady today. Zalatoris even, he almost double bogeyed the last hole.
Made a great putt.
We weren't there for this part. We saw it on TV, but really made, I mean, to double bogey that and lose all the momentum like Cam Smith did, and he saved his own ass, but he seems pretty steady. Morikawa plus 550 for top five. Berger, we didn't talk about him. Our friends at FanDuel, I don't think they'll mind us saying this. They said that.
I think they will mind.
Well, that's fine. That's fine. They
this
said
is something
there was
we
some,
heard from a lot of places.
Today. Right. That there was the sharps all over the place, like two people, Berger and Hatton, heading into the tournament. And Berger was like minus three at one point. And we were like,
well,
Jesus.
He was minus three on the 17th.
Yeah.
You know, walking off of 17 and on the tee on 18, he was minus three. And then he hit it in trees.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm marking him down. I would be shocked. Tiger's 6-1 to make the top five. I would honestly, if he makes the top five,
no,
I think that would be
that.
More amazing than
they
anything he's done in his career.
Yeah. That's it's
right?
a fact. That's yes. right. Don't. And I say, just don't do that.
Let's let him make the cut. Mess with that. Just let's get what we get here.
Exactly right.
If Tiger makes the top 10, which is plus 260, that would be one of the most amazing moments.
Totally agree with that.
Yeah. So top 10, Cam Smith's minus 280, Scheffler's minus 200, and DJ's minus 195. Is there anybody lurking? If we had to bet on one person in the plus one, plus two range, where the narrative on Sunday would be like, they had a tough Thursday, but since then they've been lights out guy. I would have Morikawa at plus one.
I honestly think Rory. There is something.
Now you
well,
can't,
but here's why.
On.
Because
come
his
on,
historical
man.
His historical performance
yes.
in majors.
His first day was the problem.
It continues to be the problem. He was on his way to an under par.
Yeah, we thought he was
going
to
performance.
Finish.
Today, and you know, choked on the bit a little bit coming in.
So he's plus one. He's plus one heading into Friday. What is he? What's his top five finish for? It is 701.
See that he is the king of a backdoor top 10, and if you know.
Top 10, he is plus 270.
Yeah, so that would be one where I might consider it.
Do you guys feel good about Spieth today? I didn't.
No.
We saw none of the things. We were bullish about his potential for two reasons. Because he had an unbelievable final round in Texas on Sunday in terms of his ball striking prowess.
Tee to green, he gained 11 strokes.
Exactly. An amazing tee to green performance.
In that tournament.
And the Augusta mystique that he just channels it and funnels it and it runs through his body, it courses through his veins, and he was out there just chatting away and discontent all across the board.
Yeah,
couple other FanDuel bets I like. I'm just doing this in real time. Top USA player,
right
now DJ is plus 330 and Scheffler is plus 310.
But to finish first, you get.
Just beating the USA, those are pretty good odds.
Right.
Plus 330?
DJ's plus 650, Scheffler's plus 750 to win outright. So you
right. So why
sense.
Not bet the...
Exactly. It's a little bit of arbitrage here.
Yeah, there is an arbitrage.
So you like that or you don't like it?
I'm not smart enough on the math to do it, but Scheffler at top American and DJ to win.
Is a nice way to hedge.
Could any be. Countries you want to know the top guy for?
Well, it looks like, you know, I like Cam Smith odds as top Australian now.
Oh, well, he's minus 450. Jesus.
Corey Connors is top Canadian, looks pretty good.
Top European is really the one that you should get in where it's still in anybody's game.
A total jump ball.
Yeah.
Top European.
Because if Victor shows up in similar pants tomorrow.
He won't.
He's leading the board at plus 380. You got Rom right behind him at 500 and Rory at 650.
So, Nathan, give us a winner. From what you saw today, both in person and the stuff we watched on TV and how we digested the tournament for the last 2 days, who's winning this tournament?
My heart says DJ, but I think my head says Cam Smith.
Interesting. House?
I say DJ, heart, and head.
Scotty Scheffler's going to stuff
it. I think it's DJ.
You do.
I think it was fitting that we ran into, I mean, we didn't talk to them, but that we saw his family on the 11th, and it just, I don't know. Felt like that was a sign. It was a sign for me to go bet on DJ.
Oh, okay.
Just the whole thing that we, you know, and by the way, let's kudos to us, the Masters veterans now, our second tour. My second tour. How many times have you been, House?
A lot. I've been a bunch of times.
We really
how many times have you been, Nathan?
We understand similar. We understand it now.
We just owned where to be.
Yeah.
I was really proud of ourselves. We owned that. One of the things with the Masters, and I think with any golf tournament, is you got to be ready to audible from what you thought you were going to do if an opportunity strikes up, right?
That's how you play the Masters too.
It's true.
We're walking by the 7th and there's a nice spot and the green's right there. And we're like, and there's shade. And we're like, that seems cool. Let's do that.
Let's just stop here for a minute.
Let's stop there. And then it turned 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Now we're waiting for Tiger.
Because it turned out to be a beautiful spot. It was like temperature wise, because of the trees and the way the breeze was coming in, it was very comfortable and we were very close.
Yeah. I need reconstructive knee surgery now.
Okay.
Well, and then we parked between 15 and 16. We got to see Tiger finish 15.
Yes.
We got to see him get on 16 and birdie it.
Yeah. Bryson and Cam came through in front of them.
Do I get credit for calling that or no?
I mean, yeah.
I adamantly called that he was going to make that.
You did.
You did say it.
We felt the energy and agreed, but you were the first to say this is happening.
Because he seemed locked in all of a sudden.
30 footer.
And he hit the best shot into that green of his threesome.
Yeah. Yes.
A lot of guys were hitting good balls into that green, his threesome.
We didn't appreciate it because both Cam and Bryson put it in super close.
Yeah.
And both of them made their birdie in front of him.
So he makes the birdie, and we hightail it up to 17 to the green, and we get to see him putt on 17 in time. And then we hightail it again down 18, and we get to see his approach shot. And
the par saving, amazing par saving.
I was so proud of us. I really thought that was a masterclass.
You know what? To me, what it delivered for us, the three highlights of the day for me were the three Tiger roars. The Tiger roar, we were standing on 7,
yes,
waiting for him to come. We heard an enormous roar on 6.
Right.
Enormous. So we're like, and Nate's immediately like, Tiger, that's a Tiger roar.
We forgot to talk about this. This is one of the best parts of being at the Masters, trying to guess what the roar was.
Yeah.
And it's like, did it come from 6 or did it come?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so you're doing that. And then the Tiger roars are always different. So it's either Tiger did something or somebody just had a hole in one or an eagle. Those are the only two options.
Only two options.
Yeah. That was the conversation we had.
I think if Mickelson had been out there, that he could have rivaled the roar a little bit, I think, pre all the shit that happened. Yeah.
Absolutely. But then once you figure out through the math and the starting times and where the groups are in position that it's a Tiger roar, then we have to start betting, did he hole a shot?
Or did he just get close?
Did he just put it close? Or did he just make a putt? And then when the second one comes,
then you know, the putt. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he stuffed one and then he made a putt because we got two of those. And then so that we were away from the hole for a Tiger roar. Then we got to be in the Tiger roar ourselves and participate
in it. We got to roar.
16. We roared.
Legit roar.
And then we got to, on 18, watch... Again, every time, the whole day, every time he approached a green, every time he approached the tee box, standing ovation.
Everybody's up.
Yeah.
And we got to watch him walk up, get that standing ovation, execute that approach unbelievably well, validate it by making the putt. Again, a giant, enthusiastic response. And then when he's walking off the green. And
that's the appreciative place
where he hugged Earl, the place where he hugged Charlie.
It was so great
sacred ground.
We saw Roger Goodell like 5 minutes later. It was such a nice moment. And then saw Roger Goodell wearing a green jacket, by the way.
Yeah.
He's like, this guy, really? He's got to be here.
He's a member. Yeah.
There's two other noises that happen at the Masters. One is the,
Me and the Woods.
Like the, where it's like either it's a long putt that almost goes in or a long chip or
almost a whole
an approach shot that spins back.
Yes, yes.
And might
yes.
go in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's a roar we were worried about hearing is if Matthew Wolf tried to kill the guy he was playing with today. And it was like the if he just started hitting the guy with the day dart.
That was Oosthuizen. No, Matt.
Oh, yeah, or Oosthuizen. Any of the golfers melted down, we were trying to figure out what would it be like if they just took an 8-iron and just hit their caddy with it or something, what the gallery sound would be. And I think it would be like, oh.
Yeah, there's a lot like of respectful of silence. So when you hear the disappointment, you know it's really bad.
If respectful silence is usually not a good sound at the Masters.
No.
That's usually the, we appreciate that you're here, but that was pretty embarrassing. Let's all just move on. Oosthuizen had one on the 18th. He hits an approach and almost kills somebody. Like
He put it into a woman's chair. Yeah.
Yeah. And then
she was in it.
Yeah.
She was in that chair.
And they had to clear all the chairs.
Yeah.
And then he chips out and the chip sucks and he like whips his club against the back. And we were like, oh no, this could be the, That was fun. Yeah, I'm with you. So we think there's three Tiger wars.
Well, and just the experience of the day for us, that was, you know, the third one when he was leaving, that's when I got emotional. That's when I was like, wow, we just saw something.
Yeah.
That's feels like a once in a lifetime kind of thing. Like, I don't know why I'm feeling emotional, but I am.
Yeah, right by that.
That was like the second time we'd seen you like that. Because the first time was when the Brooklyn Domino's pizza came. And it was the same kind of emotion.
Like, I gave it like that the delivery person a gigantic tip, I assure you.
All right, any other last thoughts before we go?
Well, what have we not seen that we're going to grab tomorrow? Tomorrow we feel like we need to see a little bit more of the front, right?
Oh, yeah. Course experience wise, we hit virtually everything except for 1 through 5 in terms of our scope and our strategy today.
Yeah, so we'll,
go up. I really want to get up to the back of 1. I think that's such a cool vantage point.
Yeah,
it tends to be a little bit less congested up there, and you can see
we need Sarah Grow Balionis.
Yeah, we have to go say hi to Amanda. Yeah. Miss Balionis Renner. Mrs. Balionis Renner.
One last great thing happened to me today. Because you run into people at the Masters, obviously. You never know who you're going to run into. Guy yells my name, I turn. I told this story in a podcast a while ago that when I was going to high school in Connecticut, I was playing golf one day, and they had all these IDs for people who like left stuff on the course, like driver's license, different things. And I saw this driver's license and the guy had brown hair and kind of looked like me. And I was like, I'm just going to pretend that's my license because that guy's 21 and now I'll have a fake ID from this.
So wait, did you work at the golf course?
No, I was just playing there. I pretended.
Wait. You were playing at a golf course.
And I was in the pro shop after and
team.
I was like, I left my license.
As a teen.
No, wasn't. I was like 18 or 19.
Yeah, that's what I'm
I was
asking.
Probably 19.
And
they give me the ID.
You pilfered the lost and found.
And his name was Bart Osmond. And I'd gone to high school with him, but he was ahead of me. And I became Bart Osmond. And that's how I bought liquor for
did
us at Holy Cross.
That, did they give you that ID by accident or did you ask for that ID?
No, I told them I left my ID and they gave it to me. So I became Bart Osmond.
Did Bart know?
Bart didn't know. But Bart was like 5'9". So every time I bought drinks, I had to like spread my legs out so I seemed shorter. And then one time at the State Liquor, which is where we bought a lot of liquor in Worcester, at one time I saw the lady kind of eyeballing me. And this was like only a couple months before I turned. It was probably like 4 months before I turned 21. And she was eyeballing me. And then she's like, do you have any other identification? I was like, no, I don't. I just have that in my credit card. And or money. I didn't even have a credit card
because it wouldn't match.
So is that now? That's all I have. And she's like, "I'm gonna take this." And you have that moment where like the kind of the jig's up.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, that's too bad. And so that was it. I stopped being Bart Osmond. But I mentioned the story, and he loved it because he had a bunch of friends. So I'm like, hey, let's listen to this podcast. And the guy was Bart Osmond. So anyway, I got to meet Bart Osmond. So I got to thank him in person. Today at the Masters, for the 16 months, I got to be Bart Osmond.
Well, I'd like to thank him as well, because I was a third-party beneficiary of a lot of that.
Bart Osmond bought us a lot of liquor in college.
We're almost out of tequila in this house. Can he?
We don't need Bart Osmond's ID, but man, oh man.
Anyway, thanks to Bart. It was great to see him. I think we're wrapping this podcast up, but the, of course, the basketball is getting a little wonky house.
What's going on?
So we have the Bucks are only up 3 against the Celtics with 11 minutes left, and the Raptors are beating the Sixers. So I'm assuming we won't have, we should probably just end the podcast here, but if anything crazy happens, we'll do another bonus basketball segment. Otherwise, I'll talk about it with Russillo on Sunday night. Sunday night, I think it's going to be a 2-part podcast for me, because we got the Masters, we got all the basketball stuff, then late night we'll have all the matchups. So I think we're going to split up into 2 parts. You guys are going to be doing Fairway Rolling right after the Masters.
Yes. We'll be fired up, ready to put on our own green jackets.
We'll be talking about FanDuel stuff. We were scouting this because next year we're going to come back for FanDuel and we're going all out. We're going to have video. We're going to have nephew Kyle will be here. He wanted to come this year, but it didn't work out. Next year he's coming. A lot of people will come. It'll be a whole FanDuel extravaganza with video. Maybe we'll have show. Maybe we'll have celebrity guests.
We could do that.
Live at the Masters.
Why not?
Celebrity guests presented by FanDuel.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows what that will bring? I know what this year brought. It brought some tears, some emotion, and about a combined 20 extra pounds for the three of us.
Well done, boys.
Good to see you, Drunk House. Good to see you, Nathan Hubbard.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, that's it for the podcast. Thanks to Nathan. Thanks to House. Thanks to Kyle Crane for producing, as always. Thanks to Dylan Berkey. Thanks to FanDuel for helping us get to the Masters. We had a great time. I will see you on Sunday with the 2-part podcast with Priscilla. Looking forward to it.